I'm Carolyn Liu, and I'm a grateful believer who hates buying new cars. Now, let me clarify. Yeah, I didn't get a welcome Carolyn on that one. Now, let me clarify. If money were no issue, if I could go out and buy whatever car I wanted, I might not dislike this process so much, but money is an issue. In fact, a new car to me means gently used. And also, if the whole gas mileage cost of gasoline wasn't an issue and I could get whatever car I wanted, it would be a lot more fun. But the cars that are fun to drive get terrible gas mileage. And then they're very expensive on top of that. And that's bad for the environment and bad for my wallet. And so I have a couple strategies for dealing with this. Those of you who've seen me drive into the parking lot know that I drive a 13-year-old Mitsubishi, and it smokes a little bit, and sometimes it squeals when you first turn it on and you drive it. I'm not sure what that's about, but I have a couple tactics for dealing with my desire not to think about buying a new car, much to my husband's chagrin. And the first tactic that I use is I delay talking about it. I have two little kids at home, and delaying is super easy. See, when he says, should we talk about getting a new car here, or let's sit down and talk about what kind of car should be our next car, what we should look for, all of a sudden, it's amazing, those kids interrupt constantly. And so I say, oh, well, just a second, I'm helping Landon with his homework. So delaying is a great one for me. The other thing I'm really good at is minimizing. I say, well, it just smokes a little. And after a few trips to the mechanic, we were able to get it through DEQ. So it's not that big of a problem, right? And yes, that is a bluish color behind the car, but it's not bothering me because I'm looking out the front windshield, not the back. And so minimizing is also a very good strategy for dealing with this. And then the third, just ultimate all around, and all of you guys are with me on this one, is just denying that it's a problem. I have no idea what you're talking about. Is that squealing noise not normal when you turn on a car and you drive a few feet? And so my three tactics, delaying, minimizing, and denying, are very effective in delaying this decision to actually start planning and have to start saving and researching for a new car that I know isn't going to be very much fun to buy because it's not going to be a really, really cool car. And so I'm not really into that process. Well, tonight's talk is about just the opposite. And if you're here with us at CR in September, you know that we start with denial. And specifically, we're referring to the issue that brought us here, that it's very easy for us in areas of our life to slip into denial about how our problems affect us. And so at this lesson, we're in the third step, and we're talking about just the opposite. We're talking about taking action. But specifically, we're talking about taking action in the area of our spiritual lives. And so step three, if you're familiar with the 12-step program, is we made a decision to turn our lives and wills over to the care of God. And for those of you who are more familiar with the Celebrate Recovery model, step three comes out of principle three. It's also on your handout, where I consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. Now, you might have noticed on your seat tonight there's a little sticky on the back of it. If you could take that off, and if you haven't already gotten a pen, I think Greg is going to wander around and pass those out to you. If some little kid ran off with your sticky, just grab one from the seat next to you. I want you to think about what brought you to CR. If you're newer to CR, this might be easier for you to get in touch with. Is it that your alcohol use has got out of control? Is it that your marriage is going so poorly and you're in a lot of distress? Are you going through a divorce? Are you struggling with a mental illness? Is depression overwhelming you? What is the reason? Just write one word. You're not going to have to share this with anybody. It's private, confidential. If you've been here for a while, you can either choose to write down what initially got you here or what you're currently working on, because I have a little bit of bad news for you. Once you work on your primary issue, the Lord is so gracious, He usually brings us a secondary and a tertiary issue and so on and so on and so on to work on. So you may find that what you originally came through the door to work on is not why you're here tonight. So write down what you're here tonight for. And then I'd like you to write a number on your sticky, a number from 1 to 10. If you were to see your issue completely resolved, how satisfied would you be with Celebrate Recovery? how satisfied would you be on a scale of 1 to 10? You don't have that issue anymore. It's completely resolved. It's gone. You don't struggle with temptations to abuse drugs or alcohol. You don't struggle with temptations to overeat. You're feeling great after your divorce. It feels like heaven. What number would you put down? Go ahead and write it. 10 is fabulous. 1 would be not very good at all. 5 is I can't make a decision. And that's a whole nother problem. So just save that for a little bit. We're actually going to go to the Bible for tonight's lesson. And we're in the book of Luke, which is in the New Testament. If you brought your Bible, it's kind of like right there. And Luke is what is known as a historical narrative. A historical narrative is basically like a news report. Somebody wrote down what they saw and experienced when they were alive, when Jesus was alive as well. So they're documenting that. Now, an interesting fact you may not know, because we're used to historical narratives that are actually fiction. How many of you are Tom Clancy fans? Anybody here? Those books, if somebody in 500 years or 1,000 years or 2,000 years comes across a Tom Clancy novel, because of the detail and the thoroughness and the use of real names and real places, they would have a hard time knowing if somebody was writing fiction or nonfiction. And so sometimes in our critical thinking mind, when we look back on the Bible, we think, well, maybe this was a form of fiction. But did you know that form of writing that Tom Clancy writes, that genre, did not exist in this time? So when people wrote a document about something that happened and was very factual like this, they were writing it because it was really like a news report. It was really something that they saw and experienced. So the story is about Jesus, which is probably no surprise since we're in the New Testament and this is the Bible after all. And I'm just going to tell you the story. I'm not going to read you the passage. So Jesus is traveling to Jerusalem, and he's with some of his disciples. And he's traveling between two regions, Samaria and Galilee. So he's kind of not really in Samaria and not really in Galilee. Another way you could say that is he is in no man's land. So he's walking on his way, and there are 10 lepers who are in a group. These are people with leprosy who call out to him, and they say, have mercy on us. Now, lepers, I did a little research on leprosy. One, you should know that in the text here, it doesn't actually use the word leprosy. It says it's some kind of a skin condition. But there's lots of documented cases of leprosy as far back as Bible days, and so it probably was leprosy. But leprosy is an interesting condition. It was believed at the time to be incredibly contagious. Now we know it's actually not all that contagious. You have to have repeated exposure, so many times exposure of droplets from the nose or mouth to get leprosy. And even then, once you get leprosy, it will not show up for 3 to 5 years is the general incubation period, and it can be up to 20 years. But in this day and age, lepers were believed to be highly contagious, and so they were avoided. So leprosy is the skin condition. And it starts out with disfiguration or skin discoloration. And so look at this first picture here of somebody's kind of neck. It might start out like this, kind of some lumpiness and some discoloration. It might progress. In the next picture, there's a picture of a guy's hand. So, it becomes more obvious that something is really wrong here. It kind of looks like a case of psoriasis gone multiplied or something. But eventually it actually causes nerve damage and tissue damage, especially at the extremities. And so check out this next picture. This is probably the most common way that you see people that have leprosy, and where their fingers, the tissue has actually worn down to nubs. It's really disintegrated more than worn down, but it can be worn down because there's no feeling. And an area of the body that it tends to really affect, and if you ate a big dinner, you just might want to look down right now, is the eyes. And so it is very damaging to the eyes. And we'll move on to maybe a different slide so you don't have to stand there and look at that the whole time that I'm talking. Although I will say, on that one that I thought that zombies were created in somebody's mind. And when I saw that picture, I was like, no, they saw somebody who had leprosy and then created the whole zombie thing. So now you knew something. No, I'm just making that up. I have no idea where zombies came from. But it'd be interesting for you to know that about 180,000 people currently have leprosy, and about 200 people a year in the United States are diagnosed with leprosy. The difference is that there's treatment for it now. So you get on a strong antibiotic, and it gets treated. So unless you're in a poor area where there are no medications, which is why there's 180,000 people that have leprosy around the world, because there's areas that don't have medical care, you're going to do okay. You're going to get over this situation. But the lepers in the Bible day, one, there was no treatment. So ultimately, it leads to extreme disfiguration. Beyond that, it was believed that you had committed a sin in order to get this leprosy. And so you were believed to have been a bad person in some way, or your family was a bad person. Now think for a minute what that would feel like as you think of the first picture, as you started to notice over the 3 to 5 years before you have a full-blown case, symptoms of leprosy. It progresses slowly. So can you imagine showering one morning and kind of noticing some funkiness on your skin? And can you imagine then every day kind of checking that out? Well, is this just ringworm or a bug bite, or is it's not going away? And over time, the decision would either be made for you, or you would have to make the decision yourself to go to the priest and present yourself for an examination. So either people would tattle on you and say, I think this guy's got leprosy. Of course, now we know that's way too late. They've already been spreading this thing for 3 to 5 years. But back then, they would be examined, and they would be determined to be either clean or unclean. And from the minute you're determined unclean, you are an outcast. So that means you no longer are able to do whatever occupation you previously did. So you're no longer able to work, no longer able to bring in an income. You are no longer able to live in your city or with your family. Can you imagine that feeling as you're noticing that something is happening, something has gone awry on your skin, and thinking, when this finally comes out, I won't get to kiss my wife anymore. I won't get to hug my kids anymore. I won't get to attend family gatherings. I won't get to participate in my faith in a community way or in civic events. I'm going to have to live outside the city. And so in some ways, while it ultimately is a death sentence, the diagnosis of leprosy back in this day was almost worse, because you have to live, but you have no means of caring for yourself, no means of making an income, all isolated and all alone. And so this is the people group that is calling out to Jesus, people who are living in abject poverty, completely isolated, completely exiled, and they cry out for mercy. Now, that's a common theme that you'll see when people ask for healing in the Bible, is it says they cried out for mercy. They're saying, take a look at me and have compassion. And Jesus, he just heals them from a distance. He doesn't even go over. And what's funny is he says, hey, go show yourselves to the priests. Now, if you came to me today and I had some special powers and I could heal you of your condition, I would probably tell you I've healed you of your condition. I wouldn't say go see your pastor. That would be a little unclear. But in that day, that meant they knew exactly what Jesus meant. What he meant is you will be healed enough that you will be considered clean. And so these 10 guys are off like a rocket to see the priest, because they are getting their lease on life back. They can go back to work, they can go back to their families, they can go back to community, to religious life. Everything that was precious and dear, they can return to. And their motivation, after feeling that isolation and poverty for so many years, it's a pretty strong motivator. And it says on the way they started to get healed, and one, on realizing that he was healed, returns. And he falls on the ground, and in a very loud voice, he praises Jesus and he thanks him. And the author of Luke said, and get this, he was a Samaritan. And the syntax, the way the wording is, it's like, oh my goodness, he was a Samaritan. Can you believe it? I mean, it's the clincher to the whole story. And the reason that's a clincher is because the Samaritans in Bible times were not looked on very favorably by the religiously powerful. They were looked down as the dogs in society. And so the last person you would expect to have a religious experience would be a Samaritan. And this man returns to Jesus, and he falls on his face, and he says, he thanks him, and he praises him. And Jesus kind of asks a rhetorical question. He says, well, this is kind of interesting. I mean, if I remember right, 2 seconds ago, I healed 10 of you, and only one of you, why has only one come back? And then he turns to the man and he says, rise and go, your faith has made you well. Now this story of the lepers should be a huge encouragement to us. It's meant as an encouragement. It's an encouragement because if you've ever in any way in your life felt rejected or like an outcast, this story is saying Jesus is into you. So if you felt like your addiction somehow makes you less than or not as desirable, if the things that are hang-ups or habits for you kind of put you in a class of your own, if your mental illness makes you not as popular or wanted as certain people in society, or maybe it's your financial status, you're not the high and mighty, the powerful. If for any reason in your life you have felt like an outcast, what this story tells us is that Jesus is into you. He's into people who have alcohol problems. Jesus is into divorcees. Jesus is into people who have mental illness. Jesus is into people who aren't very financially successful. So this story should be a huge encouragement to us because Jesus is into all of us. Even those of us who don't meet up by society's standards in one way or another. And we might want to say, well, he healed them from a distance. He just didn't want to get his hands dirty. It's like, get those guys to stop yelling. I mean, obviously they didn't have very much to do, so of course they would yell out to any passerby. I mean, they're not working and they're lonely and they're bored. That could be easy to jump to that conclusion, but we know in the previous passage in Chapter 5, it talks about Jesus touching a leper in front of a whole group of people. And so we know it's not his uneasiness with being next to these people, but rather it's a demonstration that Jesus can heal from a distance. So I kind of got on a couple rabbit trails there. I'm going to repeat the story really fast just so we're on the same page. Jesus is walking between two places. There's 10 lepers. He heals all of them from a distance. They go running off to the priest. One comes back thanking and praising Jesus, and Jesus says, rise and go, your faith has made you well. So that's kind of the recap in case I lost anyone with my rabbit trails there. Rise and go, your faith has made you well. Some translations say, rise and go, your faith has saved you. Some say something along the lines of, your faith has healed you. Why does he say this to this guy? Didn't he heal the other guys? The word that is used there, and your faith has made you well, is the word sozo, S-O-Z-O. A common definition for it is to make well, to heal, or to rescue. But he did that for the other 9 guys, so why is he making a point of saying it to this guy? Another definition is to save, especially someone who is suffering, or to preserve someone who is in danger of destruction. Well, the next slide there, I think he saved all of them from suffering. I guess in some way or the other, they were in danger of destruction. They were going to die. But there's one more definition that's important to consider, and that it's to save from eternal separation from God. All 10 men received physical healing. It never says the other 9 started getting their leprosy back. All 10 received physical healing, but only one was so-soed. Only one received a spiritual healing in his life. And the difference? The difference is that to receive spiritual wholeness, it requires a response. And that's what we're talking about tonight, is a response to what God offers for us. Remember when I asked you to write down on the sticky there your issue? And remember how I asked you to rate how happy you would be? I'm guessing most of you would be pretty happy. If that issue weren't existing anymore, one, we could just not put out the chairs next week. CR might be done, but you would all be happy. And let's pretend for a minute, because God does have the power to heal you from a distance, that issue is completely gone. So I want you to crumple up your paper and toss it on the floor. Don't worry, I personally promise I will come pick all of them up and I will recycle them for anybody who's getting a little stressed about that. This would be fabulous, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it just be fabulous? And God has that power. He has that healing power in our lives. But something's missing from this picture. And what's missing from this picture is that it's going to end. You know, getting healing from your issue is like only getting a sandwich at McDonald's and not getting the full meal deal. Why? Because I don't know if it's going to be one day or if it's going to be 60 days for you, but your physical life on this, I can guarantee you one thing, your physical life is going to end. So it'd be great to live the rest of your days not ever having to worry that you use food inappropriately to cope with your emotions. That would be fabulous. And really, I believe that that is what heaven is going to be a little bit like. And I'm still going to be eating. And similarly, it would be so fabulous to realize, wow, I am never going to have that desire to look at pornography again. I am never going to look at an image of a woman inappropriately. I'm only going to have pure thoughts towards a woman. Oh, that'd be great, free from here on out. Similarly with drugs or alcohol, that would be so fabulous. But at the end of the day, there's eternity. And you're either stepping into eternal separation from God or eternal celebration with God. And so we don't want to sell you short here on just the one-day deal or the 60-year deal. We want to give you an eternal deal, a chance to not only combat this particular issue that brought you to CR, but also get to know your God in a deep and lasting way that'll go with you forever. And so our first answer blank on our handout is accepting Jesus Christ as your higher power. 1 out of 10 lepers accepted. You know, the story, what it also typifies is how Jesus always acts towards us. He was a gentleman. He didn't haul those 10 rascals over and say, now you've got to accept me. I healed you, so you be thankful. And look what I did in your life. Aren't you grateful? Now you better serve me every Sunday and come to church and volunteer here and volunteer there. He didn't do that. It was their choice. And I want to assure you that if you're here tonight and you're not sure you want to make a commitment to know Jesus or have a spiritual life, we are still glad that you're here. And we will love you and we will walk alongside you and we will hope that it is more closer to 60 years that we get to spend time with you than one day. There is no limit to your participation. You're not manipulated or getting your arm twisted that it has to be a certain way. But we do want to offer you more if we can. And so not only accepting Jesus Christ is important, but part of that is committing to start asking and following His will. So that's your second blank. Committing to start asking and following His will. That can seem like tricky language. What is the will of God? What would God have me do? It's really quite simple. One way to do it is you can use this verse and you just pray it. You don't even have to think of your own words. You say, teach me to do your will, for you are my God. May your good spirit lead me on level ground. If you don't know how to ask for God's will, that's the prayer you pray. Really, it's just asking, God, what would you have me do in this situation? And every single day, moment by moment, we are left with a series of choices where we have that chance. I can think the first thing that usually happens to me in the morning, and it's usually right around 5:45 or 6:15, is there's a little body on two legs that comes and wakes me up. And it's always for sure on Saturdays and Sundays when I don't have to get up that early. It's always there. And I have to ask, God, what would you want me to do in this situation? And when I ask God that, it's amazing. This beautiful voice comes out of me. Oh, good morning. I'm so glad to see you. And when I don't do that, it sounds more like, go back to bed. But God committing to doing His will in our life is simply taking each situation before Him. Our finances, what we do with our time, where we go, how we help people, and saying, God, what do you want me to do in this situation? Do you want me to do this? How do I follow your will? And sometimes He tells us plain and clear, and sometimes He doesn't. But as you get to know Him, He tells you more and more. Another way of saying this is your next blank, turning it over. It means saying, okay, it's not going to be my way, but I'm going to turn it all over to you. And the result of that is this beautiful verse, which if you don't have a verse to repeat to yourself, there was someone here this evening eating dinner who was reading through verses. And that's such a great way to get to know God more fully. But this would be a great verse. Come to me and I will give you rest. Wear my yoke, for I am gentle and humble. And you will find rest for your souls. Matthew 11:28-30. That's the result of turning it over. So what keeps us from taking these three steps? What keeps us from taking the step of accepting, committing, and turning it over? Whether that be for the first time you get to know Christ or day by day in your life. Well, I'll tell you one of the things that I hear a lot is I don't have time. I'm so busy running between all these things. I haven't really had time to think through whether this is a decision that I want to make or not. And another one I often hear is, well, I have some intellectual reservations. I'm just not sure if the Bible is really from God. I'm not sure if the stories in it are true. I'm not sure if Jesus is God. And the other one I usually hear is some version of, I can't stand the church. You know, bad things happened to me at the church. There were bad people there. They did X, Y, and Z. They betrayed me. And I'm not minimizing any of those responses. But I want to share that underneath all of those responses, that I don't have time, or I have these intellectual reservations, or the church stinks and they did these bad things to me, underneath it is usually one common thing. See, the devil doesn't have a whole lot of tricks in his bag, just a few. But they're powerful, and that's fear. It's fear. And I'm going to share tonight a very sophisticated tool for getting beneath your fear. You ask yourself, what am I afraid of? That's my very sophisticated tool. What are you afraid of? For most of us, it's something like, I might be wrong. And then after you're able to answer for yourself, what am I afraid of? I have a second very sophisticated tool for you to use. You ask yourself, well, what then? What then? Well, maybe I would look like a fool. Like here, I went back to my family and I told them I found Jesus, and then it turns out He's not real, and so now I look silly. I will have been stupid for making the choice. Maybe my family will mock or disown me. So for every time you can come up with an answer for what then, I have another highly sophisticated tool. And you ask yourself again, well, what then? And what then? And what then? And this tool gets you to the root of what you and God need to work out. Now, I'm not knocking, do not hear me incorrectly, that I'm knocking a thorough examination of the credibility of Christianity. I think if you have doubts about, is the Bible real? Did Jesus really exist? Is He God? Those kinds of things. And you're really going to, you sincerely have those concerns, you should pursue it. You should pursue it. You will be surprised by what you find. But the Bible is in a highly credible document. The life of Jesus is one of the most well-documented lives that exists. The proof that this Bible could not have come together by chance or by the will of man alone is incredible. So I'm not knocking taking your time to make a thorough examination, but what I'm saying is that most of our hesitations of approaching Christ is usually because of fear. I also want to encourage you to know that taking a step towards Christ, as it says on your sheet, is only a beginning. And this can be a bad thing if you're thinking, if somebody says at the beginning of a marathon, oh, it's only the beginning, and you know you have 26.3 miles to go. That feels like a bad thing. And I'm not at all going to say that a walk with Christ is a piece of cake. There are many hard things during a Christian's life. And your life will not be free from scrapes and bruises just because you accept the Lord. But look at it more like an adventure. God is going to take you on an amazing adventure. You're going to become a person that is completely different than you ever imagined that you would be. There's a verse in Philippians 1:6, God who began a great work in you will keep right on helping you grow until his task is finished. At the beginning, I asked some of our leaders or all of our leaders to stand up. How many of you thought, I will never be a leader at CR? That is never something that I could do or would do. Yeah, quite a few of you. God works in amazing ways. You know, when I was little, my mother was really into missionaries and learning about them and meeting them. And I loved that when I was little. I loved it because they wore interesting costumes, and sometimes they'd bring funny foods or funny objects and we would hear from them. But as I got older and more sophisticated, I just thought they were plain weird. I mean, they lived in a place where there was no malls, and they didn't go to the movies, and they didn't know what was cool, and their clothing sometimes were out of date. And so my mom would run this missionary conference, and pretty soon I figured out that Friday night at the end of the mission conference was the time that they called you to become a missionary. And so I conveniently started in high school and then again in college to find ways to make sure I was not there on Friday night, because I was sure that the God that I understood and knew, he was going to call me to some place where there was no shopping mall. And there were no movies, and people wore out-of-style clothing, and I was going to be bored, and it was not going to be fun. And I didn't want to miss out on all of the adventures that were awaiting me as a young adult in this society. And so I found ways to help in the children's program, or conveniently go to the bathroom for a while at the end, or just miss, as I got older, miss altogether. So busy, need to work Friday night. You know what? God would have never asked me to be a missionary like that. God has a unique adventure mapped out for me and for you. I'm not saying easy adventure. I'm not saying it's all full of fun, but it's a unique one that fits you. So he wasn't going to call me to some place where I was going to have to eat bugs and never go to a shopping mall. That's not me. He was going to call me to some place that fit me. And what is so funny now is that I'm deeply involved in a missions organization, and I would lead multiple trips a year if I could get away from my work and life here. I love going out, and so God found something that really fit me. And when we say it's just the beginning, it is just the beginning. God is going to take you on a very unique journey that's going to be uniquely made for you, not all fun, some really hard. But he is going to take you on that and change you in ways you never imagined. Slide 16, we couldn't have a CR meeting without saying it's just one day at a time. And that's how you do your walk with Jesus. It's one day at a time. You learn different things about him every day. You experience him differently every day. And that's the beauty of it, is that through the valleys and through the mountains, he is there, and you get to know him through each stage. So the next step, which is your last blank, is the point where we say, we're going to pray together. And for those of you who have not made that decision to accept Christ, to commit, you'll have an opportunity. For those of you here who know that there's parts of you that you have not turned over to Jesus, that there's parts that you're holding back, this is an opportunity for you as well. But most importantly, if you make a decision or a commitment in your heart, I ask that you either share it in your small group or one of those people that stood up. These are the people that can build into you, that can help you on this journey, that doesn't just end in one day, nor in 60 years, depending on your lifespan, but will take you through to eternity. Would you pray with me? Dear Heavenly Father, as I prayed at the beginning, you know right where we're at. And Lord, you know the fears that we have in our hearts about what it might look like to turn our lives over to you, where we say, you have control and not me. And Lord, we ask for those here tonight that are considering a decision to turn their lives, that you would shake loose from them any fear in their heart. And now I'm just going to pray. If you would like to pray along with me. Dear Heavenly Father, I choose to accept you as God. I choose to believe you and to commit my life to you and to walk following you rather than me. I realize I can't do this all by myself. I'm not capable of being good enough on my own actions to have a relationship with you, but I will trust in your Son, Jesus, to pay the price for all the wrong things I've done and the bad choices that I've made over my life. Lord, I ask that you help me to know you more fully and to understand you as I walk as a Christian. And I pray these things in your name. Amen.